Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Gredick, your host. It's a beautiful Friday morning. We've got an incredibly special program today. And this year, if you were not aware, is the 75th anniversary of the Berlin Airlift. Probably one of the most significant post-World War II events in our history. And we've got a special guest in the studio, Eddie Ide, who's with BerlinAirlift.org, and he's got a presentation this morning at 10:30 at Temple Public Library at 337 Sage Street, and we hope in Temple, hope everyone will turn out for that. Welcome, Eddie.
Good morning. Good to meet you, Steve.
Well, good to meet you, and thank you for coming in.
Nice to turn.
Let's just give the basics, because I think most people, even if it was brought up in school or for what we know, we kind of blow over the airlift.
Yes, we
talk about, you know, the number of aircraft, et cetera, but the full ramifications of the Berlin airlift, they're enormous. Give us that little capsule to kind of get us started.
Well, let me say this. You're absolutely right. I've given this talks about the Berlin Airlift now for 25 years, and when I've been in colleges and high schools, I get a deer in the headlight look when I ask about the Berlin Airlift, and I don't get upset over that at all, because the Berlin Airlift was overshadowed less than a year after the Berlin Airlift ended on September 30th, 1949, and the Korean War started in June 1950. So the Berlin Airlift was overshadowed by the Korean War, and then since then it's kind of been diluted because of so many other things that have happened. But if there was no success to the Berlin Airlift, there would be no NATO.
Well, and all of Germany could be communist today.
Exactly. Well, the Russian intention by Joseph Stalin, who was premier of Russia at the time, his goal was to take over Berlin, then take over all of Germany, and then expand all the way to the English Channel. And that's what he was trying to do.
But the thing that gets me about it in the evilness of communism is he was willing to starve. I think it was like 2 million people in West Berlin.
2.4, actually.
Yeah.
And you're right. General Clay said that the attempt to use starvation for political gain is exactly what Stalin was trying to do.
And, of course, the communists in China and Russia did use starvation quite a bit and killed millions.
Yes, they did. They used that in Poland and Hungary and so many countries over in Eastern Europe. And it was a terrible time for the United States. In fact, it was so bad in 1948, the world was in such turmoil, that the Truman administration reinstituted the draft in 1948, less than three years after World War II. So, but Berlin was the boiling point of the world in 1948.
Well, give us a little description, geography-wise, in terms of what we're looking at. We're looking at it now after post-World War II. Germany was divided.
Yes, sir, east and west.
And it had different zones in West Germany, but Berlin was
deep inside the Russian zone.
Right, in East Germany, but yet it was divided too.
East Germany was not divided. East Germany was all Russian.
Yeah, it was all Russian, but I mean Berlin was divided.
Oh, yes, Berlin had there were sectors in Berlin, but the country was divided into zones. So we had zones and sectors, and you had two governing groups. You had the group that took care of the zones, when their goal was to unify or bring about a Germany that would be coming back into the world, so to speak. And then in Berlin, you had the sectors. And the Russians, there was no barriers at that time in 1948, because the Berlin Wall didn't go up until 1961.
Right.
So there was there was free communication between East and West Berlin, and the Russian soldiers used to come over into the Western zones and pillage and rape and kidnap and shoot people and things like that in 1945, 46, and right into 47. That was being done until General Clay, who was our commander at the time in all of Europe, General Lucius Clay, who was a Georgian, by the way, he told the troops, he said, no more of it. Stop them, plain and simple. And that's what they did. They stopped all of that incursion by the Russian soldiers coming into the western parts of the city and causing havoc. But the city, you have to remember, Berlin had been bombed by the Americans and the British in the daytime by the British, the nighttime, or in the daytime by the Americans, the nighttime by the British for 5 years. 1940 it started, it ended in 1945 after the Russians took over the city. And what happened is that the people, the home, 60% of Berlin mm-hmm. was in ruins. Mm-hmm. I mean, total ruins.
Because back then there was no precision bombs.
Exactly. It was gravity bombs, and that's what it was, and they were flying at high altitude, trying to dodge flak and trying to dodge German fighters. And there were many targets missed. Many, many targets were missed. But that's the way the world was at that time, of course. Now, of course, we have precision-guided bombs. But nonetheless, the people in Berlin are the ones that suffered. I mean, they weren't all Nazis. The Nazis totally in Germany was only about less than 10%, mm-hmm. but they were the ruling party. They had the guns, and they had the way of taking over and ruling the city and ruling the people. And, well, you know what they did. History tells us what they did. But the thing is that the people of Berlin, they endured. Now, they didn't know what to expect from the Americans. The Americans came in, and we started supplying them with the same kind of airplanes, four-engine airplanes. When they started flying in food in 1948 in the Berlin airlift.
Well, before we get to the actual yep. airlift, and maybe we'll do that right after the break.
Yes, sir.
But you mentioned we had British in West Berlin, we had British, French, and Americans.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about how they pushed back. But the courage of that, because the Russian troops, or excuse me, the Soviet Union troops, were outnumbering Allied forces by an enormous amount.
Yeah. If the Berlin airlift had failed, the Russians had over 150,000 troops within 100 miles of Berlin. And the British, the Americans, and the French totally only had over 19,000 troops. So, you know, there would have been no way of defending the city of Berlin.
So basically now the Russians moving, I'll tell you what, let's take a break. And
okay.
We're going to come back and we talk about how it was encircled and how it was cut off. And then I very much want to talk about Truman's decision. I think that's
oh, yes, sir.
That's just remarkable. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more with Eddie Ide and Berlin, airlift.org. Remember, 10:30 this morning, Temple Public Library. We'll be back with more after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
Mountain Academy is an innovative school of academic excellence celebrating over 61 years. I'm Patrick Curran, head of school, inviting you to join us on the mountain to see our mission and vision in action. Academic excellence, a faith-based environment, and dynamic opportunities are just a few of the reasons our families choose Oak Mountain Academy. Academic scholarships and tuition assistance are available. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Welcome back to the Community Voice. We've got Eddie Ide in the studio. He's speaking at 10:30 this morning, Temple Public Library, on the Berlin airlift. And we'll get a little more about Eddie's personal story kind of toward the end of the program and why he got motivated and interested in doing this. But we're leading up now to the encirculation of the city of Berlin. And I think this was, what, 1948?
48, yes, sir.
And tell us how Berlin was cut off. I don't even think most people realize Berlin was completely within East Germany. And so it was cut off. And so you got 2.4 million people. How did they cut it off? And how were they being supplied before? Just give us that story about how they were cut
off. What happened? Berlin was going to be in the Russian zone. At Yalta in 1945, when President Truman met with the British and the Russians, President Truman agreed that the city of Berlin would be divided, even though it was in the Russian zone. So General Eisenhower stopped his troops to let the Russians take over the city, which they did in April. On April 6th to 17th, 1945, is when the Russians took over the city of Berlin militarily. They wouldn't allow the Americans, the British, and the French to go into the city until July 1st. So they had 2 months where the city was by itself under Russian rule.
And they pretty well destroyed it.
They did.
They wanted everything that had any value.
That's exactly right. That's what they did. And they were brutal to the people in the city of Berlin. And the end result is that the city of Berlin was totaled by the Russians. And then when we got in there, and they had the Potsdam Conference in late June 1945, when they got in there, we did what we could. I mean, we started the city, but the Russians never agreed to the things that we were advocating. We were advocating for a democratic government in the city of Berlin and in the zones outside West Germany. So what happened in January of 1948, the British, the Americans, and the French got together, and they said, we are going to consolidate our sectors and call it West Berlin. Mm-hmm. We're going to consolidate our zones and call it West Germany. Mm-hmm. The Russians got wind of that, and that was in January 1948. All right. That's when they decided to consolidate and form West Berlin.
And they had a new currency, too. Correct?
Then the Russians walked out of their meetings in April of 1948.
Yeah.
And in June, we instituted new money.
Right.
The new currency.
Right.
And also in April is when they began the first deliveries of the Marshall Plan.
Right.
So the Marshall Plan and the money and the consolidation and forming West Berlin, the Russians reacted to that. Stalin called his people back to Russia, sat down with them, and said, let's see if we can force the Americans out. So then on the 26th of June, by the 26th of June, the city of Berlin was land blockaded by the Soviets, and General Clay came up with the idea to feed the city by air. And he called General Curtis LeMay, who was our commanding officer in Germany at the time, and he said, can you deliver coal to the city of West Berlin? Now, flying in coal was unusual, but General Curtis LeMay said, excuse me, General Clay, did you say coal? He said, yes. Can you fly coal into the city of West Berlin? And he said, the Air Force can fly anything. And they still use that slogan. So they began the airlift in 1948, in June of 1948. The first planes landed on June the 27th. And then airplanes came in under the orders from the government, our government, from Hawaii, from Alaska, from the Caribbean, flying into Rhein-Main Air Force Base in West Berlin, at Frankfurt, West Germany, rather. And they began the airlift, and they subsequently then got more aircraft in July. And we had a total working aircraft, C-54 aircraft, which is a four-engine airplane, cargo plane, from World War II. We had over 325 of them committed to the use of the flying into Berlin, and they landed an airplane from June 27th, 1948 to September 30th, 1949. We landed over 277,586 individual flights going into the city of West Berlin, each airplane carrying an average of 10 tons, 20,000 pounds, and that was all loaded and unloaded by hand by displaced persons. These were people that had been bombed out, and people from Poland and Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and Hungary that were kicked out by the Russians.
Right. But take a moment to...
Yes.
That was a wonderful rebuilding of the relationship between Americans and Western allies with the German people.
Yes, sir.
And so they really bonded on it. The Germans helped unload the coal.
Yes, the Germans helped tremendously during that. And we would have, if the German people weren't behind it, we never would have done it, of course. Mm-hmm. But the Russians wanted to force us out, and they couldn't do it.
And I think this is important, tell the decision about Truman, decision by Truman to instigate the airlift to this magnitude.
Yes, sir.
Was a very brave and unique decision, was it not?
Yes, it was. General Clay flew to Washington in July, late July of 1948, and met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff at a meeting with President Truman. And the Joint Chiefs of Staff, including the Secretary of State, all of those Joint Chiefs of Staff at a meeting declined to support General Clay in the Berlin airlift. When Truman got up to leave the room, he said, "General, would you call in my office before you fly back to Germany?" General Clay went to see the president, and he said, "I guess you're pretty disappointed, aren't you, General?" He said, "Yes, sir, I am." And President Truman said, "Don't worry, you'll get the airplanes." Then he ordered General Vandenberg, who was the director of the Air Force, to work with General Clay to get every airplane available to the Berlin airlift. And they took 3/4 of all of the airplanes, the 4-engine cargo planes that we had in service, including some from the Navy, to go to Berlin and order them to Germany, rather, so they could fly the Berlin airlift. And this President Truman said at the early onset of this, he said, "We're in Berlin by agreement. We're going to stay there. We will not let Berlin go."
Why didn't the Soviets shoot down the cargo planes?
Beg your pardon, sir?
Why didn't the Soviets shoot down the cargo planes?
Well, it was a good reason. President Truman ordered 90 of our B-29 bombers to go to England and to France.
Okay.
England and to Germany. 60 of them went into England, 30 of them went into Germany. General Curtis LeMay made it known that he was going to bomb his way to Moscow if one of our airlifters was shot down.
Really?
Yeah. And they had Russian airplanes would fly up by our airplanes and try to interfere with them. And all our pilots had to do, they got used to it, you hold up a camera. And as soon as you held up the camera, the photo, they didn't want to get their pictures taken, so they would fly away from you. So, and there was a lot of incidents. There was about 250 incidents of interruption with our airplanes, their cargo planes. And we were flying in a conveyor belt. If you can imagine a conveyor belt of airplanes, as many as 35 and 40 airplanes flying in the specific spaces to fly into Berlin. They were called corridors, and there was only 3 of them, and 2 of them went into Berlin, and 1 of them was out of Berlin, and they were only 20 miles wide to an altitude, or 10 miles wide, 10 miles wide to an altitude of 20,000 feet. And that's where we had to stay. That's where our airplanes had to stay and our pilots had to stay, and they got used to it, and they succeeded. They succeeded very good.
Now, I read where Americans predominantly hauled the coal, and the French and the British hauled the food and other supplies.
Yes, sir, they did. We started hauling coal also from Rhein-Main Air Force Base, and then General Turner, who was the Air Force commander who went in there in July of 1948, General Turner recognized that we had two British bases that were closer to the northern corridor, the northern route into Berlin. And from those two bases, one was called Selly and the other was called Fosburgh, they were converted to American bases in August of 1948, and we flew nothing but coal out of those bases.
And these were, the coal was put in big bags.
100-pound bags. Yes, sir. They used duffel bags, Army duffel bags.
Really?
Because we had a storehouse left from World War II at a place called Erding. And Erding Depot had over a million duffel bags. And they started bringing them up. And the Army Transportation Corps was responsible for loading and moving the bags. And the bags were flown first to, driven by trucks to the airplanes getting loaded. They were put on the airplane. The airplanes flew into Berlin, and they were unloaded in Berlin, again, by displaced persons and by German loaders. And that's how they got the coal into Berlin. And they needed coal in Berlin for the sewer plant, the power plant, the gas plant, and not for the water plant, because the Russians, when they came in there in 1945, they brought in an engineer corps that replaced a lot of the water lines. Mm. And a lot of folks didn't. In fact, it took me a while to dig that information out. But the Russian engineers did a good job of reinstituting water to about half of the city. Now, when they blockaded the city, the Russians turned off the electricity. So the people that lived in Berlin, in the rubble of the buildings, they were called ruin dwellers, and there wasn't very many of them, of course, because of the war and because of the Battle of Berlin. What happened is they survived as best they could. The most important thing they used to survive was what they called a greatcoat, which was an overcoat, and their feather blankets.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that they prized. There was a gentleman right in Montgomery, Alabama, who told me about it because he grew up there. And he told me about his experiences. And I've talked to hundreds of people.
And they were living, a lot of them were living in the basements.
They were living in the basements, yes, sir. And the other thing is that the apartments that were available, and you have to realize most of the buildings didn't have glass because they were blown out, the windows were blown out by the concussion of the bombs. The city magistrates said that families had to move in together, and sometimes there would be a small room, maybe a 8 or 10 foot square room, and there would be two families living in that room because conditions were so bad in Berlin. So those are just part of the things that they had to face.
Again, Eddie will be speaking this morning at 10:30 at the Temple Public Library. We're on Facebook Live. We've got a nice little comment from Ryan who says, great to hear this story. Brings back some good memories. He was stationed in West Berlin, 42nd Engineer Company, U.S. Army, from 81 to 83. And he said he really loved the place and the German people. Okay, we're going to be back with more after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at tanner.org.
AP Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined advanced placement curriculum track to earn a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically prepared students to pursue college-level studies throughout 17 AP courses in 5 subject categories while enrolled at OMA. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Radick, your host. It's a beautiful Friday morning. Eddie Odd is in the studio. We're talking about the Berlin Airlift. He has a presentation 10:30 a.m. at Temple Public Library at 337 Sage Street this morning. And it's free and open to the public. I'd like to read, as we wrap it up, from your website, berlinairlift.org, the very last paragraph. I think it's very well written, somewhat profound. And it reads as follows. Who can say what the world would be like had the untested and improvised airlift failed? Would 2.4 million people become subjected to slavery and brutality? Would Moscow's power and influence extend to the English Channel? Would our world today be totally different? Thankfully, because of the resolve of General Clay, President Truman, the Berliners, and British and American armed forces, we will never know. Yeah, I think that's because we always speculate. And it says, did you write that?
Yes, sir.
That's very good.
Because
we always speculate, but we don't know. We just don't really know, but it wouldn't have been good.
Wouldn't have been good at all.
We know that much. Tell us, as we wrap it up, tell us how you got motivated to take this on.
Well, in long story short, I was in doing publicity for airports, air shows up in Pennsylvania. We hosted the C-54 Spirit of Freedom, which is one of the airplanes that flew in the airlift. I subsequently became a vice president of the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation. In 1998, we took that airplane and flew it to Europe for 70 days, and I did all the planning. While the course of doing all the planning, I met the officials, I met the people, I met the pilots. And while I was in Berlin, Berlin got in my heart, and I made a vow to myself over a cup of coffee one afternoon outside of the old city hall in the Russian zone that I was going to learn everything I could about the Berlin airlift and the people and the pilots and the airplanes, et cetera, et cetera. And that I've been living by that vow to myself since 1998. It's been my avocation. I've given talks in over 160 places about that. I was invited last year to the Pentagon to meet with the Secretary of the Air Force to discuss the Berlin airlift, and that was quite an honor to go to the Pentagon.
Sure.
And do that. But the main thing is I meet with the people, and I share the story with the people. And I know I've met so many of the pilots that flew the airlift and the people that lived through this, and they're in my heart.
Well, Steve, I think we ought to say, even though we're running out of time.
I don't.
Yeah, we mentioned about, there were no precision bombs. Well, these were World War II vintage aircraft. They weren't fast. They weren't the luxury aircraft that we, and they didn't have the safety that we
had.
No,
they didn't. They were called C-54s. They flew in the commercial service as DC-4s after World War II. A lot of people flew on those, older folks did. Four-engine propeller airplanes, and we still have one. It's called Spirit of Freedom, and you can see their airplane at spiritoffreedom.org, and we still fly that airplane, by the way.
But it's not a fast aircraft.
No, sir. While they were flying the Berlin airlift, they flew at a speed of 170 miles an hour, and it was all graduated speed, so that all the airplanes flying the conveyor belt into the city, they all stayed at the same speed at different levels, so they didn't have collision. But the airplane is capable of flying as high as 250 miles an hour, but we never flew it that fast, and we still don't.
And I read where we lost about 23 pilots.
Well, actually, yes, sir. 23 Americans died, 28 British, and 30 Germans died during Berlin airlift operations. Not all to crashes, by the way.
Right.
We lost about 18 of the 32 to crashes, but there were incidents where trucks got people, especially ground crew members, walked into swinging propellers.
Sure.
At night. And when the sun was shining in their eyes, they'd walk right into a propeller.
Right.
And that happened several times. But it was a good operation. And during the Easter parade, when we flew nothing but airplanes, every 32 seconds we landed an airplane in Berlin on the Easter weekend, we had 2,300 flights and not one accident.
A very historic, incredibly important piece of history that is often overlooked. And our gratitude to Eddie Ide. And go to berlinairlift.org. And if you're in the Temple area or just care to travel there, 10:30 this morning, Temple Public Library, Sage 3. Thank you, sir,
Thank
for coming
Thank you very
in.
Much, Steve. Appreciate it.
One of the most fascinating programs ever. And we wish you the very best. And thank you for listening to the Community Voice here on WLBB Carrollton.